Well, hello, Haunters. This is Green Tagged Theme Park in 30 from Scott Swenson and I. Green Tagged is the industry professional's weekly dose of what we feel is the most important news from the past week. While this show is geared towards theme parks, it does apply to what haunts are trying to do as well, which is why we're airing it here. On this week's show, we discuss the IP wars. Basically, a lot of companies are consolidating to compete with Disney Plus and Netflix, but why is that a big deal? IP is critical because it has extendability, and on this week's show, we discuss the state of media consolidation and how attractions are using IP to extend their experiences. Well, enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Green Tagged Theme Park in 30. My name is Scott Swenson with Scott Swenson Creative Development, and I am here with my co-host, Philip Hernandez from Gantam Lighting. Hello, Philip.
Hello, Scott. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm here.
Yes. So this is going to be a really energetic show, isn't it? So anyway, we do have a lot of information to cover. In fact, probably more than we will ever get to in one show. But don't panic. We always sort of find ways to get into the future shows. We've tried to arrange things in such a way that we can deal with those things that are most time sensitive and what we feel are most important, as is usually the case with our show, and move those to the top of our programming list. And when I say our programming list, I got to give credit where credit is due. Philip pretty much does all the heavy lifting, and we talk about it, and then I yammer on, and you know, he makes sense. So he does all the hard work. I'm just the pretty face. Okay,
oh,
not even that. There goes my job. Okay, I'm done. But first of all, there's a couple of things. You know, we got to talk about some of the I'm going to call them pandemic transitional quick hits, things that are happening in the industry that, you know, as we enter the next Wild West that we don't quite know how to handle when it comes to the pandemic, here are some of the things that are actually happening. And I think they're actually kind of a step in the right direction. So let's just dive in. Disneyland now will allow the entry of out-of-state guests beginning on June 15th. All guests will be required to wear a face covering throughout their visit. So that's Disneyland, which, you know, mm-hmm. California, I won't call it the most paranoid state, but certainly the most err on the side of caution state. And of course, Philip, you now live there, so you recognize the issues here. I honestly have to say, I think this is exactly the right move. I don't know. Mm-hmm. You're living in that environment, Philip. What do you think?
I think it's an abundance of caution, but I also think that it is driven by the state and, of course, what the local state wants to do. I do think that as we get into summer, indications point that they are going to relax those even more. And right now, Disney is just saying, look, June 15th, we're opening. Everyone has to wear masks because that's what the local officials are saying. That's fine. I think that they're going to ease that as the summer goes on, as we get into fall, which is fine. And I think it's the right move to start allowing out-of-state guests as we need to get back to normal, you know, because it was just a tiny bit strange that Disney wasn't allowing it, which makes complete sense because capacity restrictions and et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, I think it's all on the path to fully reopening and good news.
Yeah. And considering that, you know, me being on the other coast, me being in Florida, we were kind of the reaction here from all theme parks, Disney included, was kind of the opposite. It was sort of like, sure. Yeah. We'll reopen. Yeah. Let's wear masks. Well, yeah, okay. And what's interesting is, for example, SeaWorld Orlando employees can now be mask-free. And this is employees can now be mask-free with a vaccination card. This is the first theme park chain in Orlando to allow this, and we'll be watching to see what happens. So my question is, as a company, can SeaWorld Parks and Entertainment require their people? Are they getting around this by saying you can be mask-free if you are vaccinated or with a vaccination card? Or how are they handling this? Because aren't there some legal issues here about requiring their employees to be vaccinated or asking for their vaccination card?
I don't think it's a requirement at all. I think that the way it's kind of phrased is like an incentive, basically. Like, yeah, it's hot. We're going to get in summer. It's going to be even more hot and muggy because Florida, You know, if you have a vaccination card and you put it on file with us, you don't need to wear your mask while you're working.
So you think it's sort of a voluntary incentive kind of thing?
Yeah, I think it's a voluntary incentive thing. And, you know, we will see. I have no idea how it's going to go. You know, we will see how that goes. I do think that, you know, the arc of this is that that's where people want to get. You know, everybody wants to get to a world that was just like it was before. But to Scott's point that he always says, there's a new normal. And I'm not sure we know exactly what the new normal is yet. You know, is the new normal going to be booster shots and going to be a much more mask-friendly culture where it's something that people are just always wearing masks because it makes them feel comfortable now? And how does that translate into the comfort level of your staff? I have no idea. But I think this is so interesting to see how this experiment works with SeaWorld. I also think it's interesting that SeaWorld is the person that is like going to, I don't know why, I kind of expected Universal a little bit, but you know, it's interesting to see SeaWorld stepping into this and saying that we're going to allow this. And
right. Well, and again, going back to full transparency, I worked for SeaWorld Parks and Entertainment for over 20 years. And when I was working with them, they were considered to be one of the most conservative theme parks when it came to anything revolving around safety, anything involving protocol, any sort of legal issues. They were always, in my opinion, even back in the day, a little bit too cautious in regards to the thing. So I agree with you, Philip. I think it's odd that it is SeaWorld Parks and Entertainment or SeaWorld Orlando that is testing this out. Now, maybe they're testing it out for the rest of the company. I don't know. You know, maybe they're seeing, okay, well, if it works at SeaWorld Orlando, maybe we can put it anywhere. But hey, if it encourages people to get vaccinated so they don't have to wear the darn masks, I'm all for it.
Yeah. And I do think that, the larger incentive here, and this is just me, I don't know, this is just me anecdotally now at this point, I don't have any research to back this up, but I think that the larger incentive here is that I think attractions want to get back to, as I've just said, back to the way things were, or at least back to a situation where it looks like it did previously, because that's what guests want. And I hear that when I'm reading these announcements and looking for the news and looking at commentary, that is the number one observation that I see from guests, is that they do not want to go back to the parks until the value is where they perceived that it is, as in until they can eat at places and watch shows and do everything that you could have done previously. You know, unless the park is offering alternative programming to fill that void, basically a big argument is, why am I going to go pay the same price I did for less of an experience, you know, for less activations, when I also have to wear a mask in the middle of summer in Florida that I feel like I'm going to gag? So there's this big hesitancy. And I would guess that has come up in focus groups at all the parks, and that they are saying, how do we get back to an experience that is very close to what it looked like before, so that we get that big tipping point of guests wanting to come in?
And what I find most fascinating, if that is indeed true, that those focus groups do stand out or have come about, is it just proves that people are are happier with the lack of change or getting back to something quote unquote normal than they are a new and improved experience. Because if you talk to the same, you know, the same group of people who are going to theme parks during the limited capacity, time ticketing, basically touchless or touch-free environment, they were at that point saying, this is the best experience we've ever had in a major theme park. Especially families, I talked to several families with kids, and they said, it's great because our whole day is planned out. We don't have to stand in a single queue. We don't have to stand in line for food. We walk up, we show them our QR code, they deliver our meal to us, and the kids aren't fussy and cranky. They said, I don't ever want to go back when it goes back to normal. So again, I'm curious to see how this is going to elevate some other changes. And I agree with you, though. I think you're right. I think the parks are not wanting to remind people that we're coming out of a pandemic. And any sort of visual or physical reminder that they can get rid of, they will do. So I think you're spot on there. And since people are coming back, that means that more and more attractions are having trouble keeping staff. Now, we already talked about this a little bit, but since our last show, we have discovered that Universal Orlando is increasing its base pay rate to $15 an hour. So, again, there are other stories that we've reported on, and I'm sure you've seen elsewhere that parks are continuing to find new ways to compensate their folks. Universal's doing it, so they've jumped on the bandwagon. They recognize it's important,
mm-hmm. and that does match also with Disney, because in October Disney is set. A few years back, they had apparently an agreement with the union there to do a planned like raise of base pay. So that will match Disney's base pay by the time we get to fall as well. So kind of like the thing Scott and I have been talking about, where all these forces, you know, are converging, these forces of demand, you know, the fully reopening of places by the fall, Halloween, the haunted attractions opening, the 50th anniversary beginning, all this stuff is happening at the same time. And that's when you're going to get the base rate of all these jobs being $15 an hour. So in this area, and we already covered last week about the Cedar Point raising to $20 an hour, right. And also offering flexible schedules. So just kind of keeping that in the back of your mind for attractions folks, as you are looking at tooling up, and especially haunted attraction folks who have not started tooling up yet and not started hiring and putting contracts out there. Keep these in mind.
Well, and I think Orlando is such a unique environment because A, it is so reliant on tourism, and B, although it has three major chains and many, many, many minor chains in the ecosystem there, in the financial ecosystem, what you have to recognize is there are very few people, especially on the entertainment side, who just work for Disney or who just work for Universal or who just work for SeaWorld. In fact, it is significantly more common, or was prior to the pandemic, that people would work for all three. And if they don't keep their pay rates comparable, that just means that these employees are going to shift to take more hours for the park that is paying more. So they almost have to regulate amongst themselves in order to keep staffed. So with this return of the guest and with this new and improved interest in, gosh, we need to do something fun, or we need to do something that is going to take our minds, that is going to engage us again. More and more large companies, not just in the theme park sector, have started to invest more and more money in content. They're looking to IP. They're looking to buy stuff that, you know, and we've chatted a little bit about this in the past. But there's a lot of intellectual property out there, and it seems that more and more companies are diving in and actually throwing some money at it. It's starting to escalate rather significantly. Mm-hmm. So, and I know, Philip, you've done a lot of research on this. Why don't you go ahead and share what you found about these, like Amazon, for example.
So this has been pretty big news, and you probably heard about it in other veins, but we wanted to put this in the context of what it means for our listeners and for attractions here. And so to kind of set the scene, this is all recent news. Amazon is buying MGM for $8.45 billion. With a B, billion. That's not even that much money. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, like
it's not for Amazon.
Considering
the glut of money that Amazon got over the last year and a half.
Yeah, exactly.
They need to invest it.
But basically, yeah, $8.45 billion to buy MGM. And the other big story is that AT&T, after it spent $85 billion to buy Time Warner, it is in talks to create a new company that would merge its media businesses, including CNN, with Discovery. So the New York Times reported that the plan would incorporate all of AT&T's Warner Media assets, which include HBO and Warner Brothers and AT&T's Warner Media Group, including the sports heavy cable networks TNT and TBS, and then merge that with Discovery, which has stuff like the Oprah Winfrey Show, HGTV, Food Network, Animal Planet. So all that together coming into a package that potentially would be like HBO Max to the Super Max with HGTV and Oprah.
So it's HBO Max Max? Is that what
you're saying? It's HBO Max Max Max. It's plus plus. It's HBO
Max to the Max.
It's HBO Max plus. Plus
no,
Oprah.
I think Paramount already has the plus thing.
Okay. So basically the other big stat that jumped out here is these are just two that we're talking about, but overall, Bloomberg reported that about $80 billion is in play right now in terms of media takeovers for IP. So media takeovers is in companies buying specifically media companies this year. The acquisitions that are on the table totals about $80 billion. And, you know, this MGM one is only 8.45. And who knows how much the AT&T one is going to be, but it's going to be maybe a third of what the value was because AT&T kind of pooped with their Time Warner thing. So anyway, all that is to say that it's a very clear strategy that we see these media companies are consolidating basically to combat Disney Plus and Netflix. And why are they doing this? They're doing this because of extendability. Because as we have discussed ad nauseum, you know, IPs have really high emotional resonance with guests. And we have found out, which Disney has known since it started, that extending those, that you can take that IP and then extend those experiences, and that those are all revenue generating opportunities for you. And so the other companies are kind of catching on to that. They're also saying, hey, look, now that Disney is going so vertical in these experiences with all the new openings around Star Wars and all the additions of the Avengers campus, you know, in order to compete with that, you need to have a robust library. And I think that's what we're seeing, is these places consolidating together. And the Amazon one is very interesting because I would assume they're just going to throw that into Prime and just make the Prime catalog, their Prime Video catalog, larger. You know, and then the question is going to become, you know, is Amazon going to open a theme park with the other quarter in the couch that it has, that it could just...
Or at the very least, are they going to make money if they don't want to actually open a theme park? Are they going to make money off of licensing for what they now own, for the IPs mm-hmm. that they now own, to an existing theme park? You know, there are tons of ways to go with this. And I think that, you know, you mentioned Disney and extendability. One of the things that they did a gazillion years ago, very early on, was even back in the days of VHS, when they would release their classic films on video, they mm-hmm. would have them out for a limited release, and then they'd go back into the vaults, and then they'd reintroduce them to the next generation. And I think that that very, very basic concept is something that is going to behoove these folks in the long run. I think they're looking at that too, because they're recognizing that some of the stuff that they really didn't pay for, that wasn't necessarily the banner IP at the moment, is going to be nostalgic and retro, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. they're going to own it. So when it becomes nostalgic and retro, they can bring it back to the surface and get the parents of the kids that are now watching to become invested all over again.
Mm-hmm. How many times have we covered that on the show about absolutely. Those little experiences, even if it's a pop-up nostalgia experience, or it's like a Museum of Selfies type of thing with the set pieces or props or whatnot? I mean, there's so many opportunities for that extendability, which is what makes it so valuable,
right?
You know, which is what makes this whole thing. And if for attractions, again, to underline this point, you know, you should be thinking about your IP and the extendability of the things you're creating and putting effort into that. And then also looking at content partnerships, as we talked about previously, you know, are there people that you could partner with to work in other IP into what you're doing and to create an extended experience?
And, you know, I'm going to go a little bit off laser focus here for a moment, but because I know there are some of you thinking out there, I'm a small theme park, I can't afford IP. My suggestion there is then create your own IP and build off of it.
Yeah,
and
I agree.
Find other ways to continue to utilize it. So, you know, I mean, let's be honest. The Muppets started as a cut up sock and a coat.
Yeah.
And so that just built and built and built and built. So if you, and the way to make IP work that you create yourself is put it in every, you know, build it. So it's not just, I'm going to create IP by creating a show. Well, create a show with that character, then do offshoots of that character in your merchandise and your culinary, and then perhaps build a ride or an attraction based on the world of that character.
And then tell stories on social with that character.
Tell stories on social. Talk to a local animation studio. Get a cartoon going. You can, especially now. It's actually easier now than it's ever been. Your own IP. Because again, that's going to be the future. And eventually, when you get tired of that IP and it's got a gazillion and one followers, you can sell it. You can sell it to somebody else. Who has always handled IP in the themed attraction industry really, really well is RWS Entertainment Group. And they just announced the launch of new leased licensed character experiences, including Peanuts at Play, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, Dino Don, and Brick Live. And again, RWS has always been kind of the leader in this, I would say. Them and Feld, they kind of went back and forth. The thing I've always thought was smart about RWS is they would invest in these licenses when they were on the upswing, and they were always really good at finding who's returning, you know, just like we were talking about bringing it back to the next generation. Because I mean, let's face it, Peanuts is nothing new. Mm-hmm. But the rebrand of Peanuts at Play introduces Charlie Brown and his friends to a whole new generation again. And mom and dads are going to go see it, and especially moms, let's be honest, they make the decision as to how you spend the money. Moms are going to say, "Yep, I love the Peanuts. Let's go check it out." I think, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer, that has been, it's really interesting. I have a little bit of insight into that one. That has been an IP that has been bouncing around from person or from company to company. The family who owned it didn't quite know what they wanted to do with it for a while. And I know that with RWS, when they get a hold of it, they're going to explode it into something kind of cool. So again, we're not just sitting here talking theoretically about content, and the importance of IP. There are actually, quite a few theme park, or at the very least themed entertainment organizations out there that are doing exactly what we're talking about.
Yeah. And the thing I thought was so interesting about this is there's a, almost like we planned this, there's a quote from the CEO saying that our new leased experiences allow virtually any venue to add the power of an iconic brand to their marketing campaigns and guest experiences. And further, that RWS handles everything from design installation to staffing and guest interaction. Then beyond trained staff, integrations include food, beverage, and retail offerings. So we talked about extendability. They're taking that and they're just saying, it's not just a walk through a selfie installation. It is, we're bringing in the food, beverage, retail offerings, the full extendability, and they're providing the staff if you want that. So it's like a turnkey leased situation, which is a big, big deal, because a big piece of the licensing agreement is figuring out, is dealing with the licensing agreement and hammering that whole thing out. Here, you're just leasing from them a turnkey experience. I think.
Well, and especially at a time where staffing is such an issue, you don't have to worry about you, Mr. and Mrs. Theme park owner, you don't have to worry about any of the staffing. You hire RWS, they bring in everything, they plop it down, they do it. You pay them. It's not cheap. But again, your headaches, you can focus your energy and your time on other areas that you're having challenges with, because let's face it, every theme park is having a challenge somewhere. And just as a reminder, remember, RWS was also the company that shifted its model away from entertainment a little bit to help provide staffing for guest services, front of park operational help, HR training. So they recognized and probably have a better understanding than most of the challenges that theme parks are having when it comes to staffing. So to include all of that in a marketable IP show or experience is really smart.
Yeah. I like it. I like especially that it's a leased opportunity that does make it more budget friendly for listeners. The only, hesitancy I would say is that it is still, I think, better to go with Scott's original point. Overall, in the long term, it is better to invest in an IP that you can control. However, that's not always an option. It's not a fast option. It's a more money and creatively intensive option, and doing a lease experience like this still does get you access to those characters, and you can build other things around the park in your marketing. You can build these that stuff into it, you know? So,
right. Another thing that I would strongly recommend is I think that the leased IP experiences are great short term, and I'm just kind
of, they're great seasonal.
I'm building up on what what Philip said. I think they're great short term, and then when you actually start to look at the dollars and cents that you're spending just to be able to say peanuts and just to have Ryan and his team at RWS hire everybody and bring them to your park, you'll recognize, okay, there's some financial benefit here long term to creating your own IP. So I'm not saying one or the other. What I'm saying is use them both based on where you are in your recovery and where you are and where you want to be over the next 5 years. So use them as great tools as part of your 5-year plan.
Yep. And our next story, speaking about tools, I guess, our next story is that Marvel and SiriusXM are teaming up to launch an original scripted podcast series featuring Star-Lord. Oh my gosh, finally. I feel like I must have said on this show really forever ago when Disney first said that we are going to pivot to focusing on our Disney Plus, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, yeah, let's see it actually happen. Like, that's great to say in a press release. And I feel like this is finally it happening. And to me, also, this is a thing where I have always wondered, why aren't you doing this? Like, podcasts are picking up steam so much with some of the top podcasts. I looked at the stat a while back, but some of the top podcasts, like The Daily from the New York Times, they get 2 to 4 million individual listeners per episode, which is more than some TV networks get for their entire programming catalog. Like, it's insane, you know, and I don't know why that hasn't been a focus of Disney brand previously, but this is, that's a perfect example of them saying, we're taking this IP that we have, we are extending it into a new medium to create original content for, you know, and let's see, to get the details here, it's going to be called Marvel's Wastelanders, Old Man Star-Lord, with the first 2 episodes are available starting on June 1st, which is when we're airing this. And Attractions Magazine reported that the 10-episode series will be released weekly, kicking off the first season of Marvel and SiriusXM's multi-part Marvel's Wastelanders podcast series that will also feature other Marvel heroes, including Old Man Wolverine, Old Man Hawkeye, and Grey Widow. The storyline takes place in an alternate future of the Marvel Universe where the villains have won. Peter Quill and Rocket are a little slower and saltier when they're doing their glowing days during the Guardians of the Galaxy. So it's a great way to say we're coming up with it's just great and all those things. But it's also, it's like now they're going to create a multiverse podcast where they're bringing together multiple IPs in a multiverse in a podcast audio medium. So I think it's great. I think this is also something that's a lot more accessible as well to other parks, because, you know, podcasting can be really high budget, but you don't necessarily need a high budget, like Scott and I don't.
Yeah,
need,
you know, I was going to say, we can prove that. We also don't. We also don't have the 2.25 million listeners that others do. So, you know, I guess you get what you pay for, I suppose. I don't know. No, it's interesting. It's interesting that you say that, because I've seen more and more on streaming services, for example, the original programming on HBO Max, some of the original programming on even on Roku, they will tell you right at the beginning, for more information or to dive deeper into the story, check out our podcast, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
So basically what they're doing is they're again, building multiple layers here. You know, we live in a world, and again, for old guys like me, this is mind blowing, and I find it really exciting. We live in a world where a guy or gal someone who is gender fluid, I want to make sure I'm keeping all my pronouns clear, can sit in their bedroom at the age of 15, podcast and become a multimillionaire. You know, these are folks who this medium has blown open and has blown wide open. And I'm glad to see that these major corporations are taking, and I won't even say taking advantage of, are looking at that as a viable way to communicate with an audience. And I do have to giggle a little bit, because not necessarily my generation, but the previous generation used to gather around the radio on Sunday nights and listen to Little Orphan Annie. So
It's a pendulum. It's a pendulum.
It has come back. Mm-hmm. It has swung back. Only now, instead of sitting around the radio in the living room, you're listening to it as you're on the train to work, or when you're driving to go do something else, It's a great opportunity to do things that you don't have to watch and that you can multitask with. So,
and one thing too that I think is I don't see very tapped very often. This is a scripted series. And I think that is a big point because just we're talking about IP extension. That's an opportunity for anybody. You know, you have a creative team. A lot of you guys do used to making scripts. You know, you can make a script with a relatively low production value using the actors you already have on staff. You know, on days when your park isn't open or it's low, they can be recording bits for this. You know, it's very, very friendly to a small budget production. And another place people listen to podcasts is when they're walking around parks by themselves or, you know,
in queue.
Exactly. Exactly.
You know, if you develop a podcast that is specific to one of your attractions,
yes,
and put a QR code. Yes, they're back. Put a QR code at the entrance to the queue and say, while you're waiting, listen to the podcast. Boom.
Yeah,
there you go. Or do a podcast that may or may not be scripted. That is more of a talk show format that people can listen to throughout their day. You know, it's sort of like the park-wide
announcement too.
Well, but it can be like in the old days, the park-wide announcements. Only now, if you really want to, you can do it live on a podcast. Think about it. It's got some great opportunities. Well, guys, the name of the show is Theme Park in 30, and we have hit our 30-minute mark. So I hope you have enjoyed the show. If you have, please share the show with your coworkers, even with your staff. If you feel that this would be beneficial for them, to listen to us, and not that we have all the answers, but I think it could be very valuable for your staff to listen to what we have to say, and then you guys can have a whole bunch of discussion in your next staff meeting. So please send out the word, send people to our website, greentaggedshow.com. And the main reason I say that is, you know, we have 30 minutes to cover this stuff, but if you go to the website, you can dive deeper. There are links to pretty much everything we talk about. Philip does very extensive show notes. So it's not just something you can listen to or watch. It's also something you can deep dive into if you find something that sparks your interest or you think may be beneficial to your park or your team. So until next week, this is Scott Swenson with Scott Swenson, Creative Development, and Philip Hernandez from Gantam Lighting saying we'll see you soon.
This is a Haunted Attraction Network production.